Now, we have actually been joined here by, correct me if I get this wrong here, David. David Magis?
Majors.
Okay, David Majors is actually the CEO of the Mikamoto Auction. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for being here, guys.
Yeah, absolutely.
You have a great seat here. You get to see all the cars right when they go to cross the bond.
Yeah. I know.
Best seat in the house.
Well, that's just really. Whenever we showed up yesterday and he brought us over, it was like, wow, this is like we were in the gold bidder section in Austin, and that was great. We had a nice view of the end of the auction line, but to see here where all the cars are lined up, where they're pushing them right past us, it's an experience.
You're not going to miss any of them, although it's pretty tough to bid from this location, isn't it?
A little bit.
We might need to get you out front and get a bidder badge.
Well, that depends. What are your financing options?
Exactly. Tell us a little bit about the history of the Mikamoto Auction and how you got to be involved with them there, Dave.
Well, Mikam Auctions has been, Dane has been in business about 28 years. And the last 5 or 6 years, we've really been on kind of a rocket ship ride, as I'm sure you all have witnessed. One of my favorite quotes from Dana, I heard an interview with him maybe about a year ago, and someone asked, Dana, did you ever think 28 years ago that it was going to be this big as it is today? And he said, I've always thought that. I was just waiting for the rest of you to catch up.
That's it.
Right.
So,
nice quote.
I spent 35 years in the insurance business, the last 10 of which was CFO for a rather large national insurance company. And I've known Dana for quite a while, and I'm a car guy. And one day Dana called me up and said, you know, this is getting too big for me. I don't like to run business. I don't like dealing with accountants and bankers and lawyers. I just want to trade cars. And he said, could you maybe think about just coming and running the company so I can go play with the cars part of it? And so I actually decided to retire from the insurance business and get a real job.
Hey, there you go.
Come and play with cars myself.
That's awesome.
We're having a great time. We've spent a couple of years over the last, actually about 2013, 2014, my first 2 years with the company, building the brand. And we made a lot of investments in our brand. We built a new stage that you see behind us. We have a new TV contract with NBC. We now have a 53-foot show trailer that travels the country. Every place we don't go, it does go.
So amazing.
Launched a new magazine, launched a new website, and now we're starting to see the kinds of crowds and the kinds of sales that you all see here today. We've been on about a 30% year-over-year gain now for the last 16, 18 months.
That's amazing. You really can't ask for more than that. Like, that's a great, great growth pattern for you guys. And even, like I was saying, we were in Austin for December, and just the difference, like, I work this convention center as well as the one in Austin. I'm actually an AV tech. I do what all your broadcast guys do. And just to see the crowd difference, to see the size difference of show, to actually be at one that, you know, has 1,000-plus vehicles at it, it's just overwhelming. Like, you really can't even explain what it is to be around the sights and sounds of it.
Seeing this on TV does not display the magnitude
of
what's actually going on here. And anybody who has a chance to come out and see this, I highly recommend that you do.
It's amazing.
It's a real experience, I'll tell you that much.
Yes.
It really is.
Now, as y'all are growing with the TV show and everything else, I love the coverage that y'all do on NBC Sports. Make sure to check it out on NBC Sports, guys. The coverage of it is fantastic. And John Kramen does such an absolutely fantastic job. He really does, as the consignment director, finding these automobile collections, going out with the Mikam family and acquiring them, getting them here to auction.
And he knows more about cars than anybody I've ever met.
Well, I was about to say that. We got to speak with him in Austin.
Yeah, we sure did.
And, I mean, he only had about 15 minutes or so to speak with us, but in that 15 minutes, I mean, my jaw dropped. I was like, wow, this guy knows everything about every single car ever made.
I always accuse John of actually making that stuff up, because nobody can actually know that much.
Yeah.
Well, you would think so, but, I mean, he might be the one to prove you wrong.
I think
who knows?
You're right.
People tell me the same thing about music. I am a wealth of absolutely useless musical knowledge.
Now, what do you see for the future of Mikam in the next 3 years? Where are you guys taking this?
Well, we continue to expand on the TV show, and we continue to grow in number of venues. So, I think there's going to be a time where someplace in the country you're going to see two Mikam auctions a month. We almost have 2 a month now, but half of those are car auctions, and then of course we have the motorcycle auctions and the antique tractor auctions. So next year, well, this year actually, for instance, we'll be going to Louisville, Kentucky in September. Beautiful facility. We're really excited about doing that. So what we're finding is that because of the popularity of the brand now, and because of the maybe the resurgence in the popularity of the muscle car market, we have a big following. So we're actually getting calls from communities saying, you know, come talk to our mayor, come talk to our governor, because we want you to come to our location.
Absolutely.
And we're trying to fit all of those in because we, you know, as opposed to you have to come to us, our business model is we come to you.
Yeah.
We want to get probably some more concentration on the East Coast, particularly in the Northeast.
Yeah.
We just started to do business on the West Coast a couple of years ago. We're building that as well. And of course, our traditional longtime events like this one continue to grow. We're seeing more and more cars and better cars.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
What I really like seeing, and I'm sure you all noticed when you came in, our newest national sponsor, Dodge, has a great display of new cars.
Definitely noticed that.
I think what you see a big resurgence in the popularity of the 60s and 70s American muscle cars.
Absolutely.
And I think a lot of that is caused by the new manufacturers now, OEMs producing new Camaros, new Mustangs, the Challengers, the Chargers, the Vipers. And what we're seeing is a younger crowd is being attracted to those new models, and when they're attracted to the new models, then they have interest in the heredity. Where did those cars come from?
Yeah.
Tell me about those cars in the 60s
and
70s.
When Alan and I were walking in earlier, you know, the topic came up of, you know, we're looking at an auto auction where right when you walk in, there's a bunch of brand new cars, you know, and it seems a little strange that would be there, but at the same time, this auction is all about unique, interesting cars, primarily muscle cars, all of that. And Dodge, I mean, that display up there is only Dodge's top of the line. Like, I mean, you've got a Hellcat, you've got a Viper, you've got the Scat Pack, like everything. Like, they brought their A-team.
Yeah, it's
and that is amazing to look around.
It's proof that in America, you know, American iron has not died.
Yeah.
And if anything, it's alive and well.
Well, what I take particular pride in, you know, for years when you talk to somebody about collector cars, they would immediately think about the vintage Ferraris and the vintage Mercedes, maybe pre-war, and the Porsches. And those were the ones that were bringing the big prices. Now, if you've noticed what we've done in the last year or so, we're selling Hemi Cudas for $2.5-3.5 million. So suddenly the American muscle car is demanding the same respect and actually some of the same prices that you see some of the, you know, the traditional thoughts of what a collector car would be.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, you were mentioning a while ago the generational difference, the younger crowd getting into the original muscle cars because of the resurgence of popularity in the Challengers, the Chargers, everything else that's been remade.
Right.
Where do you fall? And I'm going to throw you a curveball here. A topic that we talked about recently was actually the new chips that are going into Mustang cars that will actually, via GPS, throttle you down to the local speed limit.
Yeah.
Where do you think about that? And where do you think that comes into play with the resurgence of muscle cars and everything else in the market?
Really bad idea.
Yeah.
That's another case of the government getting over-involved in things where they shouldn't be. You know, the worst idea I've ever heard in my entire life is cars that drive themselves.
Yeah.
Of course.
And that's what we
were
saying.
What's the point of that?
That's what we were saying, is that literally the Google car is programmed to be able to violate the speed limit and go faster.
Yeah.
So it's like, wait a minute, the human control car is going to be throttled back and the computer car is going to be going faster.
You know, we also have chips in cars now that will take them from 500 horsepower to 750. So we're looking at the other side of that, too.
There is a beautiful side of those EEPROM chips. I just always love asking people questions like that, because that is literally the future of automotive industry right now. And those are things that, as great as they are in the test bed market, are they actually something that will work for the broader scope of things?
Because you all know muscle car people and car people. How long do you think it'll take them to figure out how to override that chip?
Depends
on how good of a hacker they are.
Probably already got it figured out.
Exactly. Before it hits the market, they already know how to make it ineffective.
Before it comes out, they've got it.
Yeah.
Well, it's we were discussing it over the weekend here, but I mean, why with a Mustang is what I'm wondering. If you're going to chip a car like that, why are you not doing it with, you know, a more family-oriented vehicle, smaller vehicle, whatever? You choose the Mustang, like one of the most, if not the most historic muscle car in American history.
Yeah,
it was the first real muscle. I take that back. There were definitely other muscle cars.
Yeah,
but. You know, the Vette was one of the first one, you know, to come to the market. And what was it, 53, the Corvette came to the market?
Yeah.
Yep.
Right. And that, I mean, that was the first pure enjoyment of driving car, I have to believe, that, you know, Detroit put out. And then it was followed by just all kinds of incredible iron.
Well, we had great muscle cars until the mid-70s when the oil crisis. Gas lines killed the manufacture of muscle cars, and it really didn't come back until of late.
Right.
You know, we still had some great cars, 80s and 90s. The Fox Body Mustangs are starting to get a lot of attention now. But
I've always loved those.
But from, you know, the mid-60s to the mid-70s, you know, hopefully we're matching that era again, and somebody will be sitting here 30 years from now talking about the, you know, the 2015 Challenger, the Hellcats.
Exactly.
Well, no. Take, for instance, right in front of us. This was an iconic car from my late childhood right here, the 91.
That's the ZR1 that we were looking at a while ago.
And I believe that was the first year of the ZR1, yep. I think. Was it?
I believe so.
All right, I don't want to spew out inaccurate.
We actually asked John when he was on the show, are you a collector yourself, Dave?
I am. I'm not very mechanically inclined, so I tend to gravitate more toward the late model exotics.
Yeah, okay.
I've always said I like everything that makes a lot of noise and will go over 200 miles an hour without a chip.
Okay.
You know, I can kind of see the use of the chip, but I... You know, if I had a teenager or something in the house and a Mustang, generally those aren't a good combination. So, but, the ability to detune, I think the Dodge SRT comes with two keys. There's a version that comes two keys.
Yep.
One's a red one and one's a black one. One of them's an uptune, one of them's a downtune.
Yep.
One drives like a regular car, you put the other one in and it's a
race car. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, if something like that's optional, there's a place for it, but to make it mandatory.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, every time I go over 70 miles an hour, there's a governor on my
car. Throttle you back.
That's not going to last long.
No, not so much.
As opposed to something like, I hear commercials for it on the radio all the time, Verizon Hum is something that you can put in your car that, like, monitors, you know, driving habits, things like that. It's basically, I mean, a smart chip that you put in your car.
I've got one in my truck right now.
Yeah, one of the other features is if your kid goes out driving, you can basically monitor what they're doing, which is, to me, a little bit telematics. Helicopter parent.
Right.
But at the same time, like, if that's in your car.
That might be necessary.
Yeah.
If you know your kid has a tendency to go out and drive 90 or 100 miles an hour with his buddies, then you'll know, and you can just give him a call quick and be like, dude, slow down or you're grounded.
That's it. Now, we've got about 8-9 minutes left in this episode before we take a break, come back, get the next round of cars.
Sure.
What is your favorite car to drive?
Oh, my. All of them.
Right answer.
Yeah. And honestly, you know, I get that question a lot, and it always seems to be the last one I drove.
Yeah.
Because every time I get in a car, I say, boy, that's the best car I've ever driven. And then
that
I get
sense to me.
Oh, this is the best car I've ever driven.
Do you like two wheels as well?
I do, but I have a small contractual issue. I've been married 35 years.
That's not a small contractual issue.
I was, when I got married, I was racing motorcycles and I was skydiving. And my wife made me sign a contract the day we got married that said once we got married, I'd never again own a motorcycle. I would never again skydive, and I'd never own a boat, which I've never owned a boat anyway, but she's afraid of water, so that just kind of got thrown in. And she still has that piece of paper.
Well, I mean,
could it accidentally fall into the shredder or something like that? Accidentally sit on a hot barbecue or something.
36 years, I think you may have traded up.
I don't know. I'd have a hard time letting go of the bikes. I would have a very
hard time. What kind of bikes were you racing?
I was doing 8th mile flat track.
Okay, yeah.
So I was doing I had a 100 Kawasaki 10 speed, and I had a 1 1/4 Penton, 1 1/4 Osa.
Nice.
Always seemed to finish run over.
Uh-huh.
So I was the guy that would lead the first 6 laps and then take a little dive and have everybody run over the top of me.
Ooh, all right.
Yeah. So.
Hence the contract.
You look like you still got all your body parts, so I think you came out okay.
I still have a lot of handlebar perforations in my chest.
Gotcha.
That happens.
Yeah.
Oh, man. So, as we bring this part of the broadcast today to a close, we actually have still a huge line of cars coming up, so we're going to take a short break.
Look at this C10, man.
Yeah, I know.
We're just getting started today.
I know, and now I'm going to try to find out when there are some other famous cars coming up. I know there is a Ferrari owned by Whitney Houston that's in the auction that's supposed to be going out today, I believe.
Is that a Packard over there?
Yeah, and I don't... There was a Bel Air, and I don't know if it's already crossed, a Van Halen.
Van Halen 5.
Yeah. Somewhere right in here.
Yeah,
early on.
It was like number 4 or 5.
It was a gorgeous car.
Yeah, it was
absolutely
beautiful.
Gorgeous.
I love the paint job on that car.
No, what did it sell for? Did anybody catch that?
No, I wasn't in the arena. I thought maybe it was still in the lineup.
No, I mean, the last time we saw it, it was right here.
Yeah.
I actually get a big kick out of this Ford AA, the AA.
Oh, yeah. It's awesome.
And it's been incredibly redone.
We see so many cool cars, and that's the great thing about a Mecham auction is there's so much variety. It's not all 1969 Chevelles. You're gonna see cars like that. You're gonna see pre-war stuff, and you're gonna see late modelers, an Aventador over here, and a relatively new Huracan.
Well, and like you said, Mecham is so much more than just cars. There is artwork. Yeah. There is memorabilia. There is the farm auction.
I couldn't believe the driver's head move.
I know.
Yeah. I thought it was a miniature Zamboni when I first saw it.
So did I.
Never seen a Zamboni with three on the tree.
I thought it was one of the little, like floor waxers or something like that that they drive around whenever people are gone. I was like, they just put it right here. But
I was pretty excited to see the new slot car track that we have out front for kids. And I've been trying to get in on that, but I can't get in line.
Right.
And apparently it's just for kids because they look at me like I shouldn't even be in the line.
Well, you got to dress the part or something.
Yeah. We've got some prizes for kids, but you are more than welcome to some of them if you like, Dave. Well, once again, we have had Dave Majors on, the CEO of the Mecham Auto Auctions. We cannot thank you enough
for number
one being a part of the show today. Number two, like actually letting us come to be a part of your show.
Yeah.
We were mentioning earlier on the podcast, we were talking about it yesterday. We have yet to see anybody with a Mecham Badger shirt on that is not like the happiest person in the world.
That's wonderful.
Just loving life, living life through the passion of automobiles.
Look, everywhere.
Exactly.
I wish I could just sit here and talk about cars with you guys all day and watch these go by.
Well,
you guys have the best job today.
It's not a bad gig.
You've got another 3 hours, so you're welcome at any point.
I feel like I do.
Yeah, I might have to do some other things.
He may just have a little bit on his schedule today, guys.
Yeah, maybe so.
Maybe. Well, we appreciate you taking time out of your schedule to come talk with us.
Absolutely. Thank you, Dave.
Thanks, guys. Hope you have fun today.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for coming on. And that brings this episode one of the Mecham Auto Auction to a close. We will be back here in about 15 minutes for part two of live
Stick around,
the Mecham Auto Auction.
Thank you so much.
Said, look out, boys, I got a license to fly, and that caddy pulled over and let us by.
You've been listening to the Dudes and Beer Podcast. Visit us online at www.dudesandbeer.com. Find our audio streams on soundcloud.com and spreaker.com/dudesandbeer. Follow us on Facebook /dudesandbeer. Thanks for listening, everybody. And until next time, drink responsibly.